Welcome back. It's Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Let's talk about how we talk about female Olympians. There's a trend, and it's not good. One of the first examples happened just 2 days into these Rio Games when Hungarian swimmer Katinka Hotsu won gold and broke the world record in the 400-meter individual medley. The camera turned to her husband and coach Shane Tusup. Then NBC announcer Dan Hicks said this.
And there's the guy responsible for turning Katinka Hotsu, his wife, into a whole different swimmer.
Well, over the past weeks, we've seen several more examples of female athletes being subsumed to the accomplishments of men. How about this awful headline from the San Jose Mercury News the day after Simone Manuel won gold in the 100-meter freestyle? The headline said this: Michael Phelps shares historic night with African American. Well, the paper later apologized and changed that headline. But why in 2016 is this still happening? And how can we change it? I'm interested in hearing from you. What do you make of how the media has been covering female athletes in these Olympic Games? Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Or you can send us a tweet at Radio Boston. Well, I'm so pleased to say that joining me now are two people who know a lot about how to cover sports and how to cover female athletes. Melissa Ludke is one of them. In 1978, she was the Sports Illustrated writer who won access for women sports writers when she took Major League Baseball to federal court. She's a contributor now to WBUR's Cognoscenti. Melissa Ludke, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you. My pleasure to be here.
Also with us today from Rio is USA Today reporter Nicole Auerbach, where she's covering the Olympic Games. She's covered Olympic swimming last week. She joins us from Brazil. Welcome to you, Nicole.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
It's great to have you both. So, Melissa, let me just start with you. Was I fair or going overboard in my assessment of how the media overall has been talking about female athletes in these games?
You know, I'd give you an A on that.
I'd get an A. I'd give you an A.
And here's how I think about it. I'm from the 70s. That was my era. And a lot happened in the 70s. For example, Title IX was passed. So let's just look at 1975. It makes an easy round number of 40 years. I would say that the female athletes have really proven to us what can happen in 40 years in terms of their performances, their feats, their accomplishments. I would say that in terms of coverage of them, I am sadly seeing great echoes from the 1970s, when I was just starting out as one of the few very pioneering women reporters.
Wow. Well, Nicole, you're in Rio, there on the ground doing this coverage for us. What has it been like for you?
Well, a lot of it, I'm sort of, us here in Rio are getting a little bit after the fact, because some of these examples have happened during the NBC telecast, so obviously
right.
I'm not watching that. But I think that there just have been examples. There was the Chicago Tribune's tweet about the wife of a Chicago Bear. I mean, the constant characterization of some of these women as how they relate to their men is something that has continually happened in female sports coverage. There's a certain tone or different things that are written about female gymnasts versus the male gymnast. I think the backlash and the negativity that Gabby Douglas has been receiving, I think there is a gendered element to that. She's not smiling enough.
Right.
They never say that about the men. She gets criticized for not putting her hand over her heart during the national anthem. Michael Phelps laughed during the national anthem during a swimming medal ceremony, and I got a bunch of tweets from people being like, oh my God, that's so funny. Find out what he laughed about.
Right.
And it's just a complete different expectation for these women. And I think gymnastics is a pretty good example of that, because they're supposed to not grimace. You know, all of these insane, super athletic, very difficult tricks that they're doing. They're supposed to smile at the end. It's supposed to look effortless. And the men are able to grunt. They're able to, you know, show that this is a lot of physical exertion.
Well, and their game faces, their serious game faces. I mean, there was a whole meme around Michael Phelps and his,
yeah,
like, serious game face. It was celebrated as, like, don't mess with this guy.
Yeah.
I mean, Melissa.
And Gabby Douglas is criticized for not smiling.
Exactly. So, Melissa, what is it about how female athletes are still viewed today, not obviously between other athletes, but
mm-hmm.
for us as a general public, that it seems like we can't talk about them just as athletes, that we have to bring their gender into the conversation. I mean, we don't have to, but that's what happens.
Well, I know Nicole hasn't been watching the NBC telecasts, but I think it's a pretty good place to start with how they defined their mission of covering the Olympics. And that was that they acknowledged that they thought they would have more women viewers. And so what that meant is that they would divide this, I mean, make it easier for women to watch, because after all, women don't really want to watch live sports. What they want to have is a narrative, a story about it.
This is what John Miller, NBC's
John
chief
Miller.
Marketing
and
executive
said. And when you begin
said.
With that premise, and then you take it further and look at what those narratives start to look like, there's a formula to them. With the men, it's showing them as the gritty competitor. How did they get to achieve what they've achieved? With the female, there is always a part to this narrative story that Sally Jenkins, the Washington Post columnist, calls sort of the Harlequin scenario. There's always, I want to put the gauze over it while I'm watching it, because it always has to be about what also makes this athlete female. She can not just be seen as an athlete training for an athletic competition, but how in her personal life has she been able to do that?
Yeah.
And there's so we start with that narrative. It's very difficult when you're presenting that narrative all the time for the audience to get themselves out of that, because they get trained almost to see people in this way.
Well, I mean, so NBC, as you mentioned, has been front and center in saying that they're going to prize narrative over actual athletic accomplishment. I mean, John Miller's full quote, he said, more women watch the games than men, and for women, they're less interested in the result and more interested in the journey. It's sort of like the ultimate reality show and miniseries wrapped up into one. A lot of people took exception with that. Nicole, I'm wondering, when you're writing, is there a pressure or an expectation that when you're writing about female athletes that there has to be some sort of narrative involved?
No, and I think that's what female sports writers took great offense to, and female sports fans. I mean, I can't count. You know, you go to the bar to watch Sunday NFL games, there's a bunch of women who are wearing not a pink jersey, the regular colored jersey of their favorite team, and they're diehards, and they couldn't care less about any backstories. But I think a lot of the ways that really interesting stories are told, especially at the Olympics, are about those backstories, not necessarily, you know, a cookie-cutter narrative, but everyone has fascinating backstories. Michael Phelps has a fascinating backstory at this Olympics. So I go into it, regardless of gender, trying to tell those stories, because I always, when I approach my writing, I always think, you know, my mom loves sports, like she plays tennis still, she coached my softball teams, but she's not going to read a story, the way I would always say it was, she's not going to read a story about Derek Jeter's batting average going up by 30 points. She's going to read a story about Derek Jeter the person. I know it's a terrible example because we never got to learn too much about his personal life, but it's that sort of approach I take to every athlete, especially at an Olympic Games where there's a lot that fly under the radar. But one thing I think helps guard me against doing what we're talking about and framing things a certain way is because I am a female who loves sports. I am a woman who writes about both genders. And I think that honestly is the root of the problem here is that, you know, every year these studies come out and it's just women are so underrepresented in sports coverage as writers, as subjects of it, as experts tied to issues around these sports, and that ends up helping to frame the issue because, you know, you have all the men creating the narrative.
Right. No, Melissa, you have something to say about this.
I was going to say, back in my day, back in that time, 40 years ago, every newsroom wanted one of us. They wanted one woman. They felt like they needed that. It was sort of a protection against legal issues that might come their way if they didn't have one of us writing. You know, I'm kind of reminded of that almost now when I look at the statistics, because the recent gender report card that came out tells us that among sports editors, only 8.5% are women. Among women who are sports columnists, it's 12%. That is a very tiny, tiny number. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm so glad Nicole's reading her stories and I'm reading her stuff.
Yeah.
And I find that she's absolutely right. You know, anyone wants a good story well told. But what I was making the point as is, what's the formula for these stories? Just got off the phone this morning with a Steve Fox, who used to be a sportscaster himself, now teaches journalism. So he's really trying to work with youngsters to try to help them to do this. And he was really saying that most of his classes, men, young men, And he said he's really been disheartened by this same thing that he's seeing in the Olympics happening in his classroom. And he was calling me because he's writing a piece now to try to put out there for other people who are teaching journalism how to get at some of this very young and how to make the changes in the journalism classes that may lead us to a place where even if these percentages stay the same, that the men who are doing it will become more conscious.
Well, so let's talk about that for a second, because we're talking about how the media and how we as a culture talk about female athletes. I mean, these are women at the pinnacle of each of their sports and chosen fields. We're joined today by Melissa Ludke. She's a journalist, and back in 1970, and she's a groundbreaking journalist, I should say, back in 1978 as a reporter for Sports Illustrated. She won equal access for female sports writers when she took Major League Baseball to federal court. She's a WBUR contributor to WBUR's Cognoscenti. We're also joined by Nicole Auerbach. She's in Rio. She's USA Today's Sports National College Basketball reporter. She's been reporting on Olympic swimming. On the picking up of what you just said about changing how journalists talk about the coverage itself, there was a great moment in the coverage of these games where former USA Olympian and current NBC commentator Rowdy Gaines said something last Sunday, because a lot of people had been quote-unquote complimenting Katie Ledecky for swimming like a man because she's so good that that meant she had to be swimming like a man. Rowdy Gaines pushed back against that after Katie Ledecky beat her own world record in the 400-meter freestyle, and here's what he said.
I love to watch her swim. She's got that loping-type stroke. A lot of people say she swims like a man. She doesn't swim like a man. She swims like Katie Ledecky, for crying out loud. Look at that, still way ahead of the world record line. 100 meters left to go.
And so great moment there from Rowdy Gaines talking about Katie Ledecky. Nicole, you've been covering swimming. React to that. Tell us what it meant that he said that.
Oh, I think it's huge, because so many people, so for the last 3 years, background, I've been writing about Katie, getting to know her, and understanding that she was going to be phenomenal at these Olympics. It's for the last 3 years, so it's sort of like, here's Katie's backstory, also pay attention, she's the most dominant swimmer right now, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, speaking of Rowdy, I mean, he is very aware, he's fantastic as a commentator on swimming, but I remember talking to him at swimming trials, and he said that Katie Ledecky may be even more dominant than Michael at his heyday. So honestly, maybe Michael should want to be the Katie Ledecky of men's swimming. But regardless of that, I mean, it is a sport that we have had female stars. So I think that helps. And I knew that once people watched Katie and the way that she won these races, she was going to reach that level. I did unfortunately see plenty of headlines saying Katie Ledecky is the female Michael Phelps.
Right.
And I think a lot of, some of the talk we're talking about headlines, these are headlines, these are editors, and maybe people who don't even realize what they're doing is gendered and unfair to the female athletes themselves. But I do think that Katie Ledecky has so much respect. The swimming community, I don't think, did that. There was one time where a headline was framed about her coach, Bruce Gemmel, used to be an engineer, and he had all these patents, and the headline read that, like, his next project was Katie Ledecky, instead of, taking away her agency and saying that this was his credit. And that is, as you were talking about with Katinka Hoff, that is a trend that we do see with female women who have male coaches. I think it happens in tennis coverage. It happens in other sports as well outside of the Olympics. But I do think that at least for the swimming media that I was around, we're used to seeing female stars. We knew Katie Ledecky would. The one thing I would say kind of tangentially is Missy Franklin had a very rough Olympics, very disappointed. She was basically in, near tears throughout the week, as it basically went as the worst case scenario for her. I almost felt that she obviously felt pressure coming into the games, but I think she almost even felt pressure boxed in as a happy, bubbly 17-year-old girl that she was, and packaged that way in London.
Uh-huh.
And I feel like she felt like she couldn't struggle, or it was even more difficult to acknowledge that. She was, she is a very positive person, but she was trying to smile through tears.
Wow.
And I think a lot of that had to do with the way she was covered 4 years ago in London.
Well, I want to try and see if we can get at least one or two calls in here. So let's turn to Corey, who's calling from West Roxbury. You're on the air, Corey.
Hi, I was just wondering if you guys could talk about the different outfit standards for men and women. It doesn't always seem to be based on anatomy. Thanks.
Interesting. This is the question that's really raised its head in sports, for example, like beach volleyball. Melissa, your thoughts?
Well, certainly beach volleyball, we don't really even have to talk about. It's been talked about so much. It really is the sport, it seems, that women watch because their husbands have it turned on. And, you know, there's pretty much one reason for that, and that's the outfits. But, you know, interestingly, this time around, I think we shouldn't forget the triumphs that also happened. And some of that had to do with the first athletes from some countries like Saudi Arabia and Afghanistan appearing. And when we want to talk about outfits, this was one of the first Olympics where women competed in Habibs. Mm. And I think we ought not to forget those things while we're talking about sort of the sexism. We ought to also applaud some of these other really amazing steps forward, even though the Saudi women, even though there were four of them, they were not officially on the Saudi team because you can't do that in Saudi Arabia. So they still were able to come by some mechanism that the Saudi kingdom arranged. But we're making small strides.
Yeah. I mean, we had a member of the Team USA fencing team competing in a hijab as well.
That's right.
Let's turn quickly, if we can, to Heather, who's calling from Easton. You just got a little bit of time, Heather.
Yeah, sure. I just wanted to comment and say thank you to you guys for covering this topic. I was a former college athlete, and I love to watch the Olympics, and I was watching it with my sons, and I remember 4 years ago when watching beach volleyball and seeing, I think it was Kerry Walsh-Jennings had just had a child not that long before. And they talked about her husband, how supportive he was and how great it was that he could watch the children so she could compete and have her career. And I was so frustrated, and I thought that was so sexist. You never hear the commentators talk about how great the wives are for taking care of all those men's children. Again, it's sort of framing the woman in reference to her man, that just not, she's an athlete, but they have to talk about how all the things her husband does, he's so supportive so she can compete.
We're hearing similar things about Michael Phelps this year, too.
Yeah. It's so funny you mentioned that, because this morning when I was sort of crowdsourcing this among my social media people to sort of get their sense of what was happening and what they saw, someone mentioned exactly that point. She said it was the moment where she felt like throwing the towel at the TV set. In fact, she might have.
Well, Nicole, we've just got a couple seconds left before we have to wrap up here. So last thought goes to you. I mean, I think the very fact that this conversation is happening in the culture means that progress is being made, but we still got a ways to go.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that Sally Jenkins' column we referenced was a phenomenal look at this issue. There was also a New Yorker piece about criticism of the gymnastics coverage and the way that it was dumbed down and not very technical because of the assumption it was female fans. And that sort of changed the tone of Olympics coverage. And they did get more specific on special things that Simone Biles was doing that were going to cost her a tenth of a step, or the way she lands, or her toes were pointed, and stuff like that matters for intelligent sports fans. So
yep.
I think that people are listening, and it's good to have the conversation. I think the way to keep it going and going in the right direction is what Melissa was mentioning earlier. It's just getting more women in newsrooms,
right.
Get more women in editor, you know, headline, the editors write headlines.
Well, we're very grateful for having both of you today to help us keep this conversation going. Nicole Arbuck, USA Today sports reporter who's covering the Olympics in Rio. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
And Melissa Ludke, formerly with Sports Illustrated. She writes for WBUR's Cognoscenti. Thank you so much.
Wonderful to be here.
I'm going to give the last word to Simone Biles, who said, "I'm not the next Usain Bolt or Michael Phelps. I'm the first Simone Biles." Couldn't have said it better. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.